To understand the gospel reading today, the story of the woman washing Jesus' feet, it's necessary to know something of Jesus' politics and the political system that he was confronting. In this sermon, I'll draw significantly on some work of Marcus Borges. Jesus said, "Be compassionate as God is compassionate." For Jesus, compassion was the central quality of God and the central moral quality of a life centered in God. It was not simply an individual virtue, but a way of expressing an alternative vision. Compassion was and is political. Compassion means feeling the suffering of someone else and being moved by that feeling to do something. In Hebrew, the word is translated more literally as womb-like. As a mother loves the children of her womb, so God loves us. Compassion, therefore, has nuances of giving life, nourishing, and caring. Contrary to, and in contradistinction to, this vision of God as compassion, the first century Jewish world of Jesus extolled holiness. Be holy as God is holy. To understand the role holiness played in that world, we need to understand how the purity system worked. Holiness meant to keep oneself separate from anything unclean, to keep oneself pure. Well, purity depended somewhat on one's birth. Priests and Levites, hereditary classes, came first, pecking order, followed by Israelites, followed by converts to the faith, and further on down, illegitimate births, followed by men whose testicles have been damaged, etc., etc. But one's degree of purity or impurity also depended on behavior. The observant of the legal codes were the pure, and the non-observant were outcasts or impure. And the outcasts included some occupations, like tax collectors and shepherds. We might say tow truck drivers. The observant were called righteous, and the non-observant, sinners. So note the word sinner is not like it's used in most Christian theology today to refer to everyone. Rather, sinners were particular groups of people. Physical form, as I inferred, was also associated with purity. So there was a category of people who were not considered whole, and this included the maimed, the chronically ill, lepers, and eunuchs. They're all on that impure side of the spectrum. Economic status also affected purity. Though to be rich did not automatically make one pure, being abjectly poor did. To some extent, this association resulted from the popular mythology, still prevalent today, that sees wealth as a blessing from God. And to some extent it arose because the abjectly poor could not afford to observe many of the purity laws. One's gender was also a determinant of purity. Like with wealth, there was nothing about being male that made one automatically pure. However, the fact of being female did make one impure, because the bodily processes of childbirth and menstruation were considered sources of impurity. And lastly, the polarity of pure and impure was correlated with whether one was a Jew or a Gentile. Again, being Jewish did not guarantee purity, but being Gentile guaranteed impurity. These sharp social distinctions were maintained by the institutions of the Jerusalem temple and the priesthood. It is in the context of the purity system, creating these sharp boundaries between pure and impure, righteous and sinner, health and ill health, male and female, rich and poor, Jew and Gentile, that we can see the socio-political significance of compassion. In the message and activity of Jesus, we see an alternative vision grounded in compassion. While many of Jesus' sayings directly criticize the purity system, he criticized the tithing, and when tithes were collected to the detriment of justice. See, tithes had to be paid on produce, which amounted to a tax that was then given to the priests and to the temple. But untithed produce was labeled as impure. So this labeling of goods as pure and impure was something of a financial rort. Those who couldn't pay tithes were the very poor, who were then labeled impure for eating impure goods. Jesus tried to turn the system upside down, and he spoke about purity being on the inside, in the spiritual heart, and not on the outside with external observance. The parable of the Good Samaritan is very clear in its critique of the purity system. The priest and the Levite, you know the story, they walked on by. Well, they walked on by a man they believed to be half dead. They had to maintain a level of purity that would be violated by contact with death. And then we have the Samaritan, who not incidentally was racially impure and religiously impure. And he, of course, is the hero of the story because he acted compassionately. The parable was judging between the holiness system versus the path of compassion. But it was not only in his teachings, but in his behavior that Jesus critiqued the prevailing purity system. He touched lepers and hemorrhaging women. As we will hear next Sunday, he entered a graveyard inhabited by a man with unclean spirits who lived in the vicinity of pigs. And of course, by doing those things, he made himself impure. One of Jesus' most characteristic activities was an open and inclusive meal table. Sharing a meal in the Middle East represented mutual acceptance. Pharisees and others would not eat with someone they considered impure, and no decent person would share a meal with a sinner. Yet Jesus practiced what Dom Crossan calls open commensality, and it was a direct attack on the purity system. And this, of course, is the basis of what Christians today call the Eucharist or the Holy Communion. This ritualized meal that we will soon partake in is not primarily a personal interaction with God or with God's real or symbolic embodiment in bread and wine. Rather, communion is an invitation to commit oneself to a political vision centered in Jesus, a vision of mutuality, equality, and compassion, and to be supported and empowered by one another in living out that vision, and often to find the Spirit of Jesus inexplicably sustaining us in that commitment. So the inclusiveness of the Jesus movement, embodying that political vision, is particularly writ large in the gospel stories like today's about women. In Jesus' world, women had few rights. They could not be witnesses in court or initiate a divorce. They were not to be taught the Torah, the first five books of our Bible, because the ability to interpret Torah was considered a form of power. They were radically separated from men in public life. Really, we should have the women on this side and the men on this side this morning. Respectable women did not go out of the house unescorted by a family member. Adult women had to be veiled in public. I see all the veils among you. Meals outside the family were also only all-male affairs. And if women were present, it was presumed they were prostitutes. A woman's identity was in her father or husband. And in this social, political context, you can see how Jesus' interactions with women is remarkable. Think of his relationship with Mary and Martha and being hosted by them. Think of him learning from and being bested in argument by the Syrophoenician woman. Think of the women, we heard a few of their names this morning, of that itinerant group that followed Jesus round and financially supported him and did not, like the men, desert him at the cross. As Elizabeth Schluss Forenza says, Jesus tried to model a discipleship of equals. And lastly, think again of our gospel reading today. Jesus defended a woman who outraged an all-male banquet at Simon the Pharisee's house, not only by entering the room, not only by being unveiled and her hair unbraided, but by intimately washing his feet, kissing them, and drying them with her hair, thereby, of course, making Jesus impure. When questioned, Jesus defended her not just with a parable about cancelling debts, which inferred that she was a worse person than Simon, but by then going on and radically reversing that inference and declaring the woman a better host than Simon. Jesus concluded with a hugely significant theological and political statement. It is great love, he said, that cancels out any wrongdoing. It's not by observing the law, not by tithing, not by obeying the priests and Pharisees. It is by great love. It is the way of compassion that reveals the heart and intent of God. And it is the way of compassion that we are called to emulate.